stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts for the power, performance, and reliability of a new Superstart battery. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Abgenommen, bedauert.
Frequency.
And thank you all for tuning in. And welcome back to another episode of Mystery Frequency, where classic stories are waiting to be heard once more. Please be sure to check the archives for over 300 episodes. And also, let me know what you think of the show. You can reach out through my email at mysteryfrequencypodcast@gmail.com, my social media at mysteryfreak, F-R-E-Q on Twitter, Mystery Frequency on Instagram. All those can be found in the description. And if you enjoyed this podcast, it would be great if you could follow, review, and leave a rating. Please enjoy the show.
Believe it or not, my dear listener, but there was a time when my friend Father Brown neither enjoyed, if such a sentiment can be attributed to so modest an individual, nor for a moment anticipated the fame which his later adventures as a detective would have thrust upon him. My story belongs to that particular period of the past. It is derived partly from scraps of reminiscence let drop by Father Brown himself, partly from information gleaned from other sources, and in some degree, I must confess, from the exercise of my own imagination. To my mind, the episode is significant in that it marked not only a milestone in Father Brown's career, but the start of an improbable friendship which was to have considerable influence upon the course of his life. In order that you may form some visual impression of the subject of my story, I should tell you that Father Brown was a small, rotund man with a mild manner, a face as round as a Norfolk dumpling, and eyes of deceptive innocence. Above his clerical habit, he wore a black shovel hat, and invariably carried a large, shabby umbrella. At that time, he was parish priest in a small Essex village, which accounts for his presence on the crowded boat train from Harwich one fine autumn morning. Among the folk descending the gangway that day, one passenger stood out by reason of his singular height and huge proportions, coupled with the fact that he wore the garb and shovel hat of a priest of the Catholic Church. Crossing the platform with all the confidence of a seasoned traveller, he settled himself in the corner of a second-class compartment of the waiting train.
Excuse me, sir, but I fancy you're sitting on the tail of my little boy's coat.
Oh, I beg your pardon, madame.
Oh, it's quite all right, sir. You'll move along a bit now. Come near and meet Tommy. Give the reverend gentleman more room. There. That's better, ain't it, sir?
Thank you. You are most kind.
Might I trouble you for the right time, sir? I notice you're wearing a watch.
Certainly. It's precisely 9:30.
Thank you. You wouldn't have to know when we're due at Liverpool Street.
No, I'm afraid not, you see.
Oh, about 11:20, I reckon. Leastways, that's what the young fellow in the ticket office said.
Dear me, I hadn't realised it took so long.
Oh, well, the train stops several times on the way, like. Picking up passengers, you see.
Ah, yes, I understand.
Morning, all. Any room for a little one? Come on, Rover, boy. Get in. No objection to the dog, I say. It's not quite as a lamb, be. Under the seat, Rover, all that. There.
Oh.
Good boy. My word. That were a narrow squeak, weren't it? By the skin of my teeth.
I'm sort of rushing you, was I?
Widow! Widow! This is Widow! Change here for Braintree! Widow!
Oh, good morning, Father Brown.
Good morning, Widow.
Did you get them?
I'd rather leave them this morning, I'm afraid.
Morning, parcels are yours, sir. Don't want to leave them behind, do you?
No, I mustn't do that, must I?
You'll be all right now, sir.
Yes, yes. Yes, I'll be all right. Oh, how careless. I do beg your pardon, ma'am. But you see, I... Oh, bless my soul, there's another of them. Oh, dear me. There goes my umbrella now. Oh, a dog, eh? Oh, I do hope I didn't break them. Yeah. Oh, brother, this is too much.
Here, let me lend a hand, Your Reverence.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, you'd have your own pretty full.
Yes, I do.
There's plenty of room in the rack of your parcels, see?
Ah, yes, most thoughtful of you. So kind of you.
Let's have that one, then.
No, not that one, please. No, that's a very precious parcel. It has silver in it, you see. Something made of real silver with blue stone. I must be very careful with that one. I'd better keep it on my knees. Just to say, if I may, sit down. Oh, dear me, I never thought the train would be so full.
Oh, there's a place for the sun. Here, sir, my little boy. Get up.
Give the reverend a little sit there. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. It's most important that I don't let this parcel out of my sight. Otherwise, I might forget it, mightn't I? Shared property, you know. The Eucharistic Congress at Westminster. I beg your pardon, sir. I'm afraid I'm encroaching on you. This parcel of mine is of such very awkward proportions.
Oh, not at all. Let it rest on my knee. You know, we should all help to bear each other's burdens, should we not? Particularly men of our cloth.
Dear me, oh, I do apologize. In my confusion, I hadn't noticed your clerical habit. Ah, birds of a feather, are we not? Allow me to introduce myself. Brown is my name. Parish priest of Little Soaker.
Then who's Deacon?
Oh, I'm delighted to make your acquaintance, sir.
Oh, the pleasure is mine.
You come from abroad, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, from Utrecht.
Ah, Utrecht. That is in the Netherlands, is it not?
Ah, that is so. A beautiful city.
I envy you. I've had little opportunity for travel myself.
No?
But I have visited Rome.
Indeed.
Yes, indeed. I shall never forget my first sight of St. Peter's. The magnificence, the sheer immensity of it all. Supreme triumph of man's creation. And of God's, of course.
Of course.
So different from my own small church of Little Soaker. Would it be inquisitive of me to inquire what brings you to England at this time?
The same mission as your own, I suspect.
Eucharistic Congress?
Just so.
Dear me. What a strange coincidence that we should meet here in this train and on the same pilgrimage. Of course, as an obscure parish priest, I do not expect to play any great part in the deliberations at Westminster. Or, for that matter, any part at all, save that of humble spectator. But it is my privilege to be on this occasion the bearer of a gift, which I hope may bring pleasure to our brethren there assembled.
May I ask what form this present takes?
It is contained in this very parcel. It is, in fact, a cross.
A cross?
A very ancient cross, wrought most exquisitely in silver, and inset with precious blue stones of great rarity. Oh, it's a most beautiful thing, believe me, and one of great historic interest.
Historic, you say?
Yes, indeed.
And probably of immense value.
Oh, dear sir.
You intrigue me greatly. I have some knowledge of such treasures, indeed. I am regarded by my friends as being rather more than a mere amateur in that field. I think I may even claim to be, in my own small way, an ardent collector of objets.
A most rewarding hobby, I have no doubt.
Rewarding, yes. But pray, tell me more about this cross. It's history, for example.
Oh, with pleasure. Well, you should first know that some little time ago, dangerous cracks appeared in the fabric of our east wall in Little Soaker.
Uh-huh.
And it became necessary to reinforce the ancient foundations of the church.
Continue, please. I am all ears.
Well, in the course of the extensive excavations which followed, one of the workmen struck his pick against some hard metal obstruction, which at first he was quite unable to identify.
Yes?
The further digging unearthed an object wrapped in layer upon layer of thick sacking. Now, when these wrappings were removed, the rough outlines of an antique cross were revealed. Tarnish and the passage of time had done their work, of course, and it was only after much careful cleaning and expert examination that the true value of our discovery became evident. It is this selfsame cross that I am now carrying with me.
The Assistant Commissioner will see you now, sir.
Thank you.
Come in.
Inspector Valentine, sir.
Ah, come in, Valentine, my dear fellow. Glad to see you.
Commissioner.
Constable, bring a chair for the inspector.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Sit down. Make yourself at home.
Thank you.
What brings you to Scotland Yard on this fine morning?
I can answer you in one word, Colonel. Flambeau.
Flambeau?
Yes, Flambeau. He's in England.
Oh, not again.
You remember him, then?
As if I could forget him. And what is our arch-villain up to this time?
It seems that once again our friend Flambeau has given the sûreté, the slip.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It appears that they tracked him from Paris to Gand, from there to Brussels, and finally to the Hook of Holland. Mm-hmm. After lying low for a day or two, he succeeded in crossing the Channel by last night's ferry boat from the Hook. He should have arrived at Harwich early this morning, and by this time is almost certainly somewhere in London.
And now it's up to you to find him.
That is my task. Will you permit it if I smoke a cigarette?
Oh, of course, go ahead. No use my offering you one of mine. I know you only smoke Cabernet. Any idea of why Flambeau should be here? You said you had a theory.
I have. The Eucharistic Congress now taking place in London. You know about it, naturally.
Naturally, it'll be hard to avoid knowing. The streets of Westminster are black with clerics of every shape, size, and nationality. From cardinals, bishops, and monsignori to the most youthful of pink-cheeked deacons. I was given my fellows quite a job sorting out their various problems. Most of these reverend gentlemen have never set foot in London before.
Precisely. That is why it occurred to me that our friend may have taken advantage of the arrival of so many strangers and chosen this particular moment to slip into the country unnoticed.
I take your point, Inspector.
He would, I imagine, most probably travel as some minor clerk or secretary connected with the Congress. In the unfamiliarity and general confusion, the presence of one more strange face would pass without comment.
He'll be dressed as a priest, you think?
I do.
Can he be sure?
Nobody can be sure about Flambeau. But he's a master of disguise, and nothing would amuse him more than to mingle with these clerical gentry as one of themselves. Fortunately for us, there's one thing which, with all his dexterity of disguise, he cannot conceal. His great height.
Stands something like 6'4" in his socks, doesn't he?
He does.
But, Valentine, friend, you're not telling me that Flambeau has come to London merely to satisfy an overdeveloped sense of humor.
Certainly not, Colonel. In an assembly such as this Congress, there should be rich pickings for a man of his ingenuity and discernment. Apart from the personal trappings of the prelates, the crozier, the insignia, the rings, the cathedral itself houses a collection of immensely valuable church plate, gold, silver, and the like. Some of this will be on display throughout the Congress.
Thank you for the warning, Inspector. Well, naturally, we're keeping a close eye on things, but it's as well to know from which quarter danger may threaten. But tell me now, how can I assist you?
If things go well, I may need to call upon the service of two of your men, one at least of inspector's rank. I cannot say when the occasion may arise, but I shall need authority from you to summon help when it comes.
Nothing easier, my dear fellow. I'll write out a note to that effect right away. You're sure two men will suffice?
Oh, that number should be ample.
Here you are, Inspector. This should meet your requirements.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Where do you propose to begin your search? The cathedral? It's the obvious place.
With Flambeau, nothing is obvious. For him, it is always the unforeseen. I shall seek him out in the most unlikely places. I'll probably take a look inside the cathedral, just in case.
Well, it could be anywhere, of course. It could be nothing less than a miracle if you run into him.
I agree, Colonel. But the most incredible thing about miracles is that they sometimes happen. Oh, dear me, so late. Well, sir, I mustn't occupy your valuable time any longer. I'm greatly obliged to you for your help.
A pleasure, my dear fellow. Anything we can do, you know. Good day to you, and the best of luck.
Well, a man must begin somewhere. And the cathedral's as good a start as any, I suppose. Not much hope of spotting my man in this vast multitude. Tall priests, short priests, fat ones and thin, and nothing to be seen from here save their backsides. Better try my luck from higher up. Oh yes, these steps should lead up to the gallery. Of course I could be wrong. He may not be passing himself off as a priest at all. That was pure conjecture on my part. Could be anything from a tall tramp on Wimbledon Common to a tall toastmaster at a fashionable hotel. For all I know, he may not even be in London. However, let us see what there is to be seen. A sea of heads. Heads with hair and heads as bald as billiard balls. Heads uplifted and heads cast down, heads that bob and heads that bow, and I can't catch a glimpse of a single face. It would be reasonable to suppose that he might be numbered amongst this congregation, but with Flambeau one does better to follow the train of the unreasonable. That is more likely to lead to his eventual discovery. Yes, my best chance lies in seeking him out in the most improbable locations, ignoring all the right places and searching only the wrong. A shop that stands empty, a cul-de-sac that leads to nowhere, some obscure little restaurant or cafe which no one in his senses would dream of entering. Oh, a restaurant, that reminds me. I had no time for breakfast this morning, and I'd give anything for a cup of coffee. If the search is to be a long one, one cannot afford to neglect the inner man. A restaurant, then. A modest one for choice. There must be many such in this vicinity. Pimlico is noted for such places.
Your coffee, sir.
Ah, thank you, waiter.
Is there anything else you would care for?
Yes, there is. Bring me a poached egg, if you please.
Certainly, sir. One egg or two?
Oh, one will do.
On toast?
Certainly on toast.
Very good, sir.
I had no idea I was feeling so hungry. Now, where's the sugar? Ah, here we are. That Flambeau. I wonder what he's up to at the moment. The trouble with him is that you can never tell. A slippery customer, that one, and no fool either. Oh, he has a brain, all right. But mine's just as good. There's always one danger, of course. As I never stop telling my young chaps at the Sûreté, the criminal is the creative artist, I say to them. The detective is only the critic. Oh, nom de Dieu! I must have put salt in this coffee instead of sugar. But
That is a sugar basin, all right. Only it's full of salt. And yet, there's a salt cellar just beside it. Sugar. Salt where the sugar should be, and sugar where one would expect to find the salt. What manner of place is this, where they put salt in the sugar basins and sugar in the salt cellars? There must be some explanation for such a singular exchange. Waiter?
Coming, sir, coming. I'm sorry to keep you waiting, sir. Here's your poached egg now, sir.
Never mind my poached egg. Test this.
Test which, sir?
What's in this sugar basin? Go on.
It's salt.
Of course it's salt. But what is it doing in the sugar basin?
That I do not know, sir.
Do you play this delicate joke on your customers every morning?
No, sir. Excuse me. I will fetch the proprietor at once.
What an amazing thing. Yet except for this singular eccentricity with the sugar and the salt, the place appears neat, and apart from that dark splash on the wall, clean and ordinary enough. Puzzling. Distinctly puzzling.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear of your complaint, sir. I can't account for the matter at all. Excuse me. Yes, this is certainly salt in the basin and sugar in the salt cellar. Well, I'm at a loss to find an explanation. I'm completely dumbfounded.
Sir.
Yes, what is it, Angelo?
I think it is those two clergymen.
What two clergymen?
The two clergymen that threw soup at the wall.
Oh.
Threw soup at the wall?
You see, that splash on the wall there. That is where they threw the soup.
Yes, sir, it's quite true. Though I don't suppose it has anything to do with the sugar and salt. You see, two clergymen came in and drank soup very soon after we'd opened for the day. Well, they were both very quiet, respectable people, and the only thing remarkable about them was that both wore shovel hats, while one was very short and the other very tall.
Tall, you say? How tall?
Oh, well over 6 foot, certainly. Yes, one of them paid the bill and went out. The other, who seemed a slower coach altogether, was some minutes longer getting his things together. But he went at last, only the instant before he stepped into the street, he deliberately picked up his cup, which he'd only half emptied, and threw the soup slap on the wall.
Which one? Which one threw the soup? Come, tell me.
Oh, I can't remember. You see, I was in the back room when it happened, and so was the waiter. I could only rush out in time to find the wall splashed and the shop empty. Well, it didn't do any particular damage, but it was confounded cheek. I tried to catch the men in the street, but they were too far off. I only noticed that they went round the corner into Carstairs Road.
Carstairs Road? Where's that?
That's first on your left as you go out of the door.
Quick, my hat and stick. I must be off.
Going, sir, but your poached egg.
Damn my poached egg. Just give me my bill.
It's there, beside you on the table, sir.
Oh, yes, so it is. Here's half a crown. You may keep the change, my man.
Oh, thank you very much, sir. Good day, sir.
Good day. First left, he said. This must be the street, then. It's unlikely they linger here, but it may lead to some clue. That shop I just passed, the greengrocer's, there was something unusual about it, something that caught my eye. What could it have been? I'll go back and look. Ah, yes, I was right. Very strange. A heap of nuts labeled best tangerine oranges to a penny. And on this pile of oranges, in bold blue chalk, finest Brazil nuts, 4 pence a pound. A highly subtle form of humor, which I fancy I've encountered quite recently.
Excuse me, sir.
Hello.
Are you aware that your sales cards appear to have become mixed?
What do you mean, mixed?
Take a look.
Well, I'll be chicken. I'll soon put that right.
Forgive the apparent irrelevance, my good sir, but I should like to ask you a question.
Well?
Why, may I ask, are two tickets placed in a greengrocer's shop like a shovel hat which has come to London for a holiday?
Yeah. Is this some kind of riddle?
Well, I'll put it another way, if you like. What is the mystical association which connects the idea of nuts marked as oranges with the idea of two clergymen, one tall, and the other short.
Well, I don't know what you have to do with it, but if you're one of their friends, you can tell them from me that I'll knock their silly heads off, Parsons or no Parsons, if they upset my apples again.
Indeed. Did they upset your apples?
Well, one of them did. Roll them all over the street. I'd have caught the fool but for having to pick them up.
Which way did these Parsons go?
Yeah. Up that second road on the right hand, sir, and then across the square.
Thanks. I'm much obliged to you.
Ah, there's a police officer. Perhaps he'll have noticed them. Constable, this is urgent. Have you seen two clergymen in shovel hats?
I have, sir. And if you ask me, one of them was drunk. He stood in the middle of the road, that bewildered.
Which way did they go?
They took one of them yellow buses over there. Them that goes to Hampstead.
I'm Inspector Valentin, Paris Sûreté. Here's my official card and authority.
Oh, yes, sir. How can I help you?
Call up two of your men to come in pursuit, quick as you can.
As easy done as said, sir. There's one of our inspectors on the other side of the road. If you'll wait here a second, I'll fetch him over.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
This is the gent, Inspector.
Well, sir, what can we do?
I'll tell you on top of that omnibus, Inspector. Come on, follow me, and bring the constable with you.
That's all very well, but I'm supposed...
You heard what the gentleman said. Come on, and look sharp about it.
You know, we could go four times as quick in a taxi.
Quite true. If we only had an idea of where we were going.
Yeah, well, where are we going?
If you know what a man's doing, get in front of him. But if you want to guess what he's doing, keep behind him. Stray when he strays, stop when he stops. Travel as slowly as he. Then you may see what he saw and may act as he acted. All we can do, Inspector, is to keep our eyes skinned for a strange thing.
Well, what sort of strange thing do you mean?
Any sort of strange thing.
Oh, no, my dear Brown. One of the strangest things we've discovered about ourselves is that we are both blessed with the same sense of humor.
So it would appear.
Oh, take no notice, my friend.
I have no intention of doing so. Oh, besides, I left a large enough tip to pay for the damage. Well,
you mean to say you... You poked your umbrella through that window, having first left the money to pay for it.
I do.
Oh, that's wretched, upon my word. Did you see the fellow's face? Anyhow, they served up a first-rate meal. No, this way, my friend, and up the hill. I know a quiet little spot where we can very well resume our interesting discussion. You know, my dear Brown, your interpretation of theology...
Imagine in your mind's eye, dear listener, the sight of that yellow omnibus crawling slowly on up towards the northern heights of the great city. As London died away in a succession of draggled taverns and dreary scrubs, the long roads of the northern suburbs seemed to shoot out into length after length, like an infernal telescope. It was like one of those journeys on which a man feels that now at last he must have come to the end of the universe, and then finds he has only come to the beginning of Tufnell Park. By the time they'd left Camden Town behind them, the two policemen were already half asleep. Then suddenly, Valentin leapt up and struck a hand on each man's shoulder.
Wake up! Wake up! Do you hear? Driver! Stop the bus, if you please. We have to get off. Quick, my friends. Follow me.
Look, Inspector, over there.
What's up? I can't see anything strange.
That restaurant on the other side, the place with the broken window. Our clue at last.
Look, what proof is there that broken window pane has anything to do with them?
Proof? Good God. Don't you see that we must either follow one wild possibility or go home to bed?
Come on. In any case, it's high time we all had something to eat. Waiter, the bill, if you please.
Coming right up, sir.
Here we are, sir.
Yeah.
I think you'll find everything all fine and correct.
Thank you. Got your window broken, I see.
Yes, sir. Very odd thing, that was. Very odd.
Indeed. Tell us about it.
Well...
No. Keep the change.
Oh, thank you very much, sir. Well, you see, two gents in black come in. Foreigners, I reckon. Two of them parsons that are running around. They had a cheap lunch. One of them paid for it and went out. The other one was just going out to join him when I looked at me change again. I found he'd paid me more than three times too much. Here, I says to the chap who was nearly out the door by this time. Here, I says, you've paid me too much. Oh, have we, said, very cool. Yes, I says. I picks up the bill to show him. Well, that was a knockout.
What do you mean?
I could have sworn that I'd put 4 shillings on the bill. But now I saw I'd put 14 shillings, as plain as paint.
Well, and then?
Well, the parson at the door, he says, sorry to confuse your accounts, but it'll pay for the window. What window, I says. The one I'm gonna break now, he says. And with that, he smashes a blessed pane with his umbrella.
Good heavens.
Well, I never. Are we after escaped lunatics?
Well, I was so knocked silly for a second, I couldn't do nothing. Man marched out of the place and joined his friend. Then they went so quick up Bullock Street that I couldn't catch them, though I ran out into the road as fast as I could.
Come on, the two of you. We're on their tracks at last.
Get a move on, Wilkins. Don't lag behind.
It's my feet, Inspector. They're killing me.
Yeah, well, never mind your feet. Pull yourself together, man, and remember you're a police officer.
I'll do my best, sir, but we must have walked miles.
Any idea of where we are, Inspector? It's difficult to tell in this light, sir. I reckon if we go on as we are, we'll strike some part of Hampstead Heath eventually.
And that's where they're making for, without a doubt.
And we'd better make inquiries again, sir. Somebody may remember seeing them.
Why not? There's nothing like confirmation to encourage hounds, even on a hot scent. That little sweet shop, for instance, with the gas-lit window. Come, let us inquire within.
Oh, good evening, sir. Can I help you?
If you would be so kind. We were wondering...
Close that door behind you, Constable.
Yes, sir.
Oh, the police, is it? Well, if you've come about that parcel, I've sent it off already.
Parcel?
I mean, the parcel the gentleman left, the clergyman gentleman.
For goodness sake, mademoiselle, tell us what happened exactly.
Well, two clergymen come in about half an hour ago, bought some peppermints and talked a bit, and then went off towards the Heath.
The Heath, you say?
Yes. But a second after, one of them runs back into the shop and says, have I left a parcel?
And had he?
Well, I looked everywhere and I couldn't see one, so he says, never mind. But if it should turn up, please post it to this address. And he left me the address and a shilling for my trouble.
And did it turn up?
Yes, sure enough, though. I thought I'd looked everywhere. I found he had left a brown paper parcel, so I posted it to the place he said. Someone in Westminster, it was. I can't remember exactly. But the thing seemed so important, I thought perhaps the police had come about it.
So they have. Is Hampstead Heath near here?
Straight on for 15 minutes, and you come right out in the open.
Thank you, mademoiselle. You've been most helpful. Come, Inspector. We've no time to lose.
The street they threaded was so narrow and shut in by shadows that when they came out unexpectedly onto the void common, they were startled to find the evening still so clear. What was left of daylight lay in a golden glitter across the edge of that popular hollow which is called the Vale of Health. The holidaymakers who roamed this region had not wholly dispersed. A few couples sat shapelessly on benches, and here and there a distant girl still shrieked on the swings. The glory of heaven deepened and darkened around the sublime vulgarity of man. And standing on the slope and looking across the valley, Valentin beheld the thing which he sought. Two figures clad in clerical black, the one much smaller than the other.
There they are, on the other side of the veil. That's our man, Inspector, the taller of the two.
Come, make haste, or we may lose them in the gathering shadows.
But even as he hurried forward so confidently, Inspector Valentin felt obliged to ask himself a number of puzzling questions.
It's all very well, but what's the explanation of it all? It's not surprising that an actor like Flambeau, dressed as a priest, should lead some silly little unsuspecting sheep of a clergyman to Hampstead Heath, but with what purpose? And what has he to do with chucking soup at the wallpaper, or calling nuts oranges, or with paying for windows first and then breaking them? And how does a brown paper parcel come into it? It seems that I've arrived at the end of a chase, but I've somehow missed the middle of it. When I've failed in the past, and I seldom have, I've usually grasped the clue, but nevertheless missed the criminal. Now it seems I'm about to grasp the criminal, but still cannot grasp the clue.
The two figures that they followed were crawling like black flies across the green contour of a hill. They were evidently sunk in conversation, and perhaps did not notice that they were walking towards the wilder and more silent heights of the heath.
Careful how you go, or they may hear us.
Beg pardon, sir. It's them boots of mine. Can't control themselves.
We must get nearer, and without being observed, better get behind that holly bush.
They've sat down the bench, sir. I can just make out the pair of them. Against the trees.
After me, Wilkins. Come on.
Right, sir.
There. Ready?
Yes.
Then down on our bellies. We must crawl towards them through the long grass. Right. En avant, then. Forward. Quiet now.
Oh, what is it now, Wilkins?
Me helmet, Inspector.
It's got caught in a bramble. Then take it off and carry it, man.
Quiet.
Ah, yes. But who can look at those millions of worlds beyond and not feel that there may well be wonderful universes where reason is utterly unreasonable?
No, reason is always reasonable, even in the lost borderland of things. I know that people charge the church with luring reason, but it's just the other way. Alone on earth, the church affirms that God himself is bound by reason.
Yet who knows? If in that infinite universe...
Only infinite physically, not infinite in the sense of escaping from the laws of truth. No, reason and justice...
Well, they seem harmless enough, those two old parsons.
Look up at those
stars. Oh, that talks a bit above me. Are you sure you haven't made a mistake, sir?
No, no, it's not possible.
Well, you can imagine any mad botany or geology, and please, and think of forests of adamant with leaves of brilliance on plains of opal. Under cliffs cut out of pearl, you would still find a notice board, "Thou shalt not steal."
Sounds like he's preaching a sermon to me.
The mystery of heaven is unfathomable. But I, for one, can only bow my head. Now just hand over that sapphire cross of yours, will you? Did you not hear me? You see, I am not the man you took me for. I am Flambeau.
Flambeau. I was right.
Come. Will you give me that cross?
No.
No? No. You won't give it me, you little celibate simpleton. And shall I tell you why? Because I've got it already in my own breast pocket.
Are you sure?
Yes, you turnip. I am quite sure. I had the sense to make a duplicate of the right parcel. And now, my friend, you've got the duplicate, and I've got the jewels. An old dodge, Father Brown. A very old dodge.
Yes, yes, I've heard of it before.
You've heard of it? Where?
Well, I mustn't tell you his name, of course. He was a penitent, you know. He had lived prosperously for about 20 years entirely on duplicate paper parcels. And so, when I began to suspect you, I thought of this poor chap at once.
Began to suspect me?
Indeed.
Did you really have the gumption to suspect me just because I brought you up to this bare part of the heath?
Oh, no, no, no. You see, I suspected you when we first met. You were far too interested in the cross I was carrying. But really what gave you away was that little bulge up the sleeve where you people wear the spiked bracelet.
How in Tartarus did you ever hear of the spiked bracelet?
Oh, one's little flock, you know. When I was curate in Hartlepool, there were three of them with spiked bracelets. So, as I suspected you from the start, I made sure that the cross should go safe anyhow. I'm afraid I watched you, and I saw you change the parcels. Then, don't you see, I changed them back again, and then I left the right one behind.
Left it behind?
Yes, in that sweet shop, do you remember? I went back and asked if I'd left a parcel, and I gave them a particular address if it turned up. Of course, I knew I hadn't, but when I went away again, I did leave a parcel. So instead of running after me with it, they've sent it flying to a friend of mine in Westminster. I learnt that, too, from a poor fellow in Hartlepool. He used to do it with handbags he stole at railway stations. But he's in a monastery now. One gets to know, you know. We can't help it, being priests. People come and tell us these things.
I don't believe you for a moment. But I can soon make sure. Oh, nothing but paper. Paper and sticks of lead. Oh!
Do you believe me now?
No, I do not. I don't believe a pumpkin like you could manage all that. I believe you've still got this stuff on you. If you don't give it up, we're all alone here. I'll take it by force.
No, you won't take it by force. First, because I really haven't still got it. And second, as I've just this moment observed, we are not alone.
What the devil do you mean?
Exactly what the reverend gentleman said, Flambeau. You are most definitely not alone.
Inspector Rowland! You here?
Yes, and with two strong policemen to back me up. No, stay where you are, Flambeau. The game is up.
It is my duty to warn you, sir, that anything you say...
All right, Inspector, let me deal with this. Now, Flambeau, I understand...
How the devil do you come to be here?
Might I be allowed to tell him, Mr. Inspector?
If you wish.
You asked Monsieur Flambeau, how did these gentlemen come here? Well, I think I may claim to have brought them.
You?
How did I do it, you may ask? Well, I'll tell you if you like. Lord bless you, we have to know 20 such things when we work among the criminal classes. You see, I couldn't be sure you were a thief, and it would never do to make a scandal against one of our own clergy. So, I tested you.
Tested me?
To see if anything would make you show yourself. You see, a man generally makes a small scene if he finds salt in his coffee. If he doesn't, he's some reason for keeping quiet. A man generally objects if his bill is 3 times too big. I altered your bill, and you paid it.
What on earth are you talking about?
Then, as you wouldn't leave any tracks for the police, somebody had to. At every place we went to, I took care to do something that would get us talked about for the rest of the day. I didn't do much harm. A splashed wall, spilt apples, a broken window. But I saved the cross, as the cross will always be saved. It is at Westminster by now. I rather wonder why you didn't stop it with the donkey's whistle.
With the what?
I'm glad you've never heard of the donkey's whistle. It's a foul thing, a murderous weapon. But if you've never heard of it, you can't have gone so very wrong yet.
How in blazes do you know of such things?
Oh, by being a celibate simpleton, I suppose. Has it never struck you, Flambeau, that a man who does next to nothing but hear men's real sins is not unlikely to be wholly unaware of evil? But as a matter of fact, another part of my trade, too, made me sure you weren't a priest.
And what was that?
You attacked reason. That is bad theology.
There you are, Flambeau. You've heard what the gentleman had to say. Now I must ask you to accompany us, and I advise you to make no attempt at escape.
Very well, Inspector Valentin. I know when I am beaten. I am, I hope, an artist and a sportsman. I congratulate you and bow to your superior skill and judgment.
Do not bow to me, mon ami. Rather, let us both bow to our master.
You mean father?
Precisely.
With the greatest pleasure.
Your reverence.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But I wonder, has either of you two gentlemen seen my umbrella? I seem to have mislaid it in the darkness.
That was The Blue Cross, a adapted from the G.K. Chesterton novel by Archer Campbell. You heard William Rushton as the narrator, Leslie French as Father Brown, Francis DeWolf as Flambeau, and Neville Jason as Inspector Valentin. Other parts were played by Betty Huntley Wright, Brian Haynes, Leslie Heritage, Hugh Ross, Stephen Thorne, Kevin Brennan, Eric Allen, and William Slay. The production was by Christopher Venning.